Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, the short war between Israel and Iran was ostensibly about the threat of Iran developing nuclear weapons, and the jury is still out as to whether Iran still has that potential capability. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, put in place in the 1950s, was designed to stop the spread of such weapons. So is it now dead? Could we, in fact, start to see more nukes? John O'Brien is Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Could you tell us a bit about the genesis of the Non-Proliferation Treaty in the first instance? Frank Aiken had a lot to do with setting it up, I understand.
Yeah, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty came about because, firstly, nuclear weapons had been used for the very first time by the United States in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But it was also the fact that nuclear weapons technology was spreading. So after the US, the Soviet Union a few years later developed nuclear capacity, and that was followed in 1954 by Britain, and then in 1960, France, and 1964, China. So it was a really deep concern, I think, in the early years of the United Nations. And you're right, Frank Aiken played a really important role in mobilizing opinion. And eventually in 1970, we got a treaty, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And I would argue that it's been one of the most successful examples of international engagement and cooperation post-1945. And what it's done is to limit the spread of nuclear weapons to only a handful of states beyond those nuclear weapons states, the original five. So the four that sit outside of the NPT that have developed nuclear weapons are North Korea, India, Pakistan, and Israel, although Israel has never acknowledged that it has nuclear weapons. But nevertheless, I think you can say that over that long period of time, the NPT has been really successful. And the problem now is that, along with other international institutions, it is being severely weakened by a whole host of factors. The entire fabric, in fact, of international institutions and international cooperation is being damaged, in particular by the wrecking ball approach that Donald Trump and his acolytes have taken to international issues since they came back to office on the 20th of January. So, you know, they left the World Health Organization, they decimated US aid, they left the Paris Agreement, the UN Human Rights Council. So I think that context is really important for understanding what's happening to the NPT, and the attacks by the US and Israel on Iran were even more contestable, you could argue, because only a few days earlier, Trump had said that the talks with Iran were going very well and he expected an agreement. Instead, he threw in his lot with Netanyahu and attacked Iran's nuclear facilities. And on foot of that, the Iranians now have come out and said, we are going to withdraw all cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency and we're going to leave the NPT.
Now, the NPT, as you say, has been extremely effective over those decades. How did it work? In what way did it discourage countries from developing nuclear weapons?
In a number of ways. Firstly, it committed the signatories to preventing the spread, the further spread of nuclear weapons, ensuring that they wouldn't give any aid or any capacity to non-nuclear states to develop nuclear weapons in the way that they had. So there was a big commitment from those five states, and irrespective of the vastly different ideologies they had at the time, I think most analysts would say that they honored that agreement. And that was one very important factor in preventing the spread of nuclear weapons. I think there were also habits of cooperation that developed over time. I mean, yesterday I was looking at some footage of Richard Nixon talking about his engagements with Leonid Brezhnev, for example, in the Soviet Union, and with Chairman Mao in China. And even though they had very great tensions between them, on some fundamental issues, they were able to talk to each other. And that was really important, I think, for bedding down the NPT. They all knew, I think, that the stakes were so, so severe. And there, I think you've got to go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis in the early 1960s. Robert McNamara, who was John Kennedy's defense secretary at the time, years later, he came out and said that we came this close to a nuclear confrontation between the United States and the Soviet Union, even though both sides were rational, that Khrushchev in Moscow was rational, that Kennedy and his advisors were rational, they still came incredibly close. And I think that also informed how the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty was to work after 1970.
Yeah. Though, could one also say that many countries around the world, when they looked at the checks and balances, it wasn't really in their interest to invest all that time and money in nuclear weapons. They didn't need to do that. And perhaps is that calculation changing now?
Well, I think the calculation kind of changes over time, and it's partly in response to changes in technology. I mean, nobody, I think, really thought about the importance of missile defense technology. If we go back to the 1970s, now it's absolutely crucial to any state's conception of how they might defend themselves against an adversary. I think you are right that some states certainly made that calculation, but others, when they looked beyond their own borders, they saw a kind of Hobbesian world of threats and predation and insecurity. And I think that was one of the reasons that motivated India and Pakistan, because of this deep mutual suspicion between them, to develop nuclear weapons at a later point in time. But I think we've now kind of reached a stage where Iran and other countries are saying to themselves, well, if we had been successful in developing a nuclear weapon, there is no way that Israel and the United States would have attacked us. I mean, nobody has attacked North Korea, for example, despite belligerence on different sides since North Korea developed its nuclear weapon. So I think the lesson that some states have taken from recent events is that if you have a nuclear weapon, you are much less likely to be attacked by an outside state or an adversary.
Yeah. So that would apply not just to Iran, I imagine.
This is the frightening thing, I think. And here I think we've got to go back to the agreement that was made 10 years ago by the so-called P5 plus one with Iran. The P5 is the permanent five members of the UN Security Council, along with Germany. They spent a couple of years in Geneva negotiating with the Iranians and with the Obama administration taking a lead. And they eventually got an agreement, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And what that did then, and this is to go back to your earlier question about why the NPT worked, in tandem with it, the international the IAEA, the nuclear agency, had direct responsibility for oversight and scrutiny of the commitments that the Iranians made about not developing a nuclear enrichment capacity. So the IAEA was able to go into Iran, and they had really stringent testing standards. And the simple truth is that Iran complied with everything that was asked of it by the IAEA. Now, when Trump came back to office, he had railed against this agreement and said it was a sellout. He tore it up in 2018, and that was basically the end of Iran's compliance with the IAEA. Trump, of course, did that because he hated Obama. It was Obama's deal. We know from the outlines of the conversations of recent weeks that the deal between Iran and the US that was in fruition was almost a direct replica of that earlier one. So, I mean, it's a tragedy that on the whim of this sociopathic American president that the NPT itself could be a casualty, not just Iranians' non-compliance with the NPT, but that it could have further ramifications. And I think the fear, especially in the Middle East, which is incredibly volatile, is that other countries, looking at what has happened to Iran, will say, okay, we can no longer be sure about the United States defending us at some point in the future. Turkey, for example, is a member of NATO, but there are conversations going on openly in Turkey about the possibility that it might develop nuclear weapons as a further kind of insurance for itself. The same is true of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And the key question is, can Donald Trump be relied upon to live up to whatever security obligations that the United States has entered into with those states? And I think there's a lot of uncertainty about that. And that may be one of the reasons that compel some of these countries to go down the Iranian route and try and develop nuclear weapons for themselves.
Meanwhile, a number of countries, European countries, have signaled they're going to withdraw from the Ottawa Convention. Maybe you could explain what that is and what the ramifications of that is.
The Ottawa Convention is about landmines, about anti-personnel landmines. And the countries that have withdrawn from it already.
Okay, it sounds like he's gone. So probably that's gremlins, as they say. Just to finish off what he was going to say there about the Ottawa Convention. Now, the countries are Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Finland, Poland and Ukraine. They've all signaled an intent to withdraw from the Ottawa Convention on the prohibition, use, stockpiling, production and transfer of anti-personnel mines, which is another sign of this increasing nervousness around the world.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.